How do we set our goal? So if one sets the cities as goal, so achieving those, then once you do, then what's next? There is no impetus, there is no drive to do something beyond that. And cities are not perfection. And beside that, for the cities there are so many rules and regulations. Now, who can get them? Because the person who is receiving has to be qualified, and the person who is giving, because it's a parampara, so then they also have to be qualified. And they have to see that the disciple is qualified. Because if he gives the siddhi and the person, not the one who is receiving it, he actually offends the personality of the siddhi, so even the guru loses the siddhi. So they are not very eager to give these siddhis away. No, very easily. So it's better to follow with the same endeavor, Krishna consciousness, and you get much more. Now that's the same example of like Bilwa Mangal Thakur, when the prostitute preached to him that with the same endeavor like you are trying to come to me, with the same endeavor you could have actually worship the Lord, and then you will attain perfection. So then the same example. So what is happiness in Krishna consciousness? In the Hari Bhakti Shudodaya, it is stated that Prahlad Maharaj, a great devotee of the Lord, prayed to Nrsimhadev, the half-lion, half-man incarnation, as follows. My dear Lord, I repeatedly pray unto your lotus feet, that I may simply be stronger in devotional service. I simply pray that my Krishna consciousness may be more strong and steady, because happiness derived out of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is so powerful that with it one can have all the other perfections and religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and even the attainment of liberation from material existence. No, so you are looking for perfection in artha, dharma, kama, moksha. Here it is. So Prahlad Maharaj, who is the authority, so he can say. So then he gives you a recipe for one way how you can fully get perfection in all these. Yes.
How is it that the perfection in these comes simply by performing devotional service and being Krishna conscious?
Well, you see, what is the perfection, right? So perfection in anything. Like you want to achieve okay, say, we can say martial art, that you want to achieve perfection in martial art. So what is the perfection? To know the moves, the best of all? Some say yes. If you are very quick, so then now you flick your hand and from distance you can turn off the flame of a candle. So you are so quick that actually, you can do that. So it's a perfection? For some, yes. But that's not it. There is other level which it's above thinking about the moves. It's mind control. Now you have to be really able to actually control the mind such a way so then you exactly know the move, so you know ahead what's going to happen. So if you can do that, and there are some martial arts, in India they have that they practice, they actually go to the next levels, and they are experts. They even know all the marma points. So then they even just touch somebody and they can paralyze somebody for some time. So now many do it. Some of the brahmanas, they learned that. So then this is how they defend themselves. Some are so expert that they can even just from distance, by distance they can do that. So they can have person under control. So they don't have to do so many moves. Like Madhvacharya's disciple. Once he was fighting, and then he didn't know anything, but he was just he got whatever it was, stick or sword, and then he was fighting, but he didn't know. And then it was Madhvacharya behind. And then he was just moving his finger, but there was a connection. So then he was so surrendered. So then was the connection, was fully in control of his sword by the mercy of Madhvacharya. So it's a question of what we consider as a perfection. So that's not it. One can kind of think, well, if I can meditate on nirvana, and then just that's the perfection. That will take, Buddhists will tell you that. But that's not it. Then one may actually understand that martial art is not material. So then there is somebody who is responsible, some personality behind the martial art. So you may start worshipping a deity, say Hanuman, and then take strength from him. Can do that? No. So then that's even higher. You are not considering yourself as the doer. Somebody who is the stronger, you surrender to them and they will do it. But look at Prahlad Maharaj. What did he do? He didn't do anything. No. He didn't try to fight anybody. He just simply surrendered to the Lord and he was just praying. And anything what was happening, Nrsimharev took care of himself. He didn't Prahlad Maharaj didn't ask him, please come and remove this or take me away from here. No, he was just fully absorbed on the Lord's lotus feet, and then Lord just did everything just to please him, but he didn't even ask for it. So that's perfection. So you fully surrender to the Lord and you are fully under protection of the Lord. And then you don't need to know how to fight, you don't need to know any of these, because you are fully satisfied, you are fully surrendered, and therefore you are under full shelter of the Lord. It takes faith. But if we can do that, then we can achieve perfection. And that's perfection. There's nothing higher than that. So then we become fearless of the material energy. So then, artha, kama, dharma, moksha. So what's there for us that we didn't achieve perfection in? What will economic development give us more once we surrender to the Lord? What karma can we get? What other more sense gratification can we get from anything more than from shelter of the Lord? What moksha can we possibly even think of higher than surrendering to the Lord? And dharma ko dharma is there. That's the highest dharma. So everything is subservient to the principles of always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So if you get to the level of always remember Krishna, then there is nothing which can overcome that. There's nothing higher than that. Same like a devotee before joining Krishna consciousness, so then he may not follow any of four regulative principles. Because he doesn't know, in pure ignorance. But once he joins, then he knows that this is low class. So he stops doing them and he's not going to... No, it doesn't enhance his devotional service if he is going to not be breaking regulative principles. So he doesn't want to... Sincere devotee is not going to look for ways how to break regulative principles and at the same time, no, make sure that he looks like a devotee. If somebody does, so then it's understood, okay, there are some problems, so he will try to look for help. How can he overcome the problem? And then with the help of the devotees, he will overcome. That means he's a sincere devotee. But if somebody wants to just look like, but at the same time, he actually doesn't want to practice devotional service, so then you cannot call that person a devotee. Yeah. Why is devotional service so rare? Krishna can easily offer a person material happiness or even liberation, but he does not agree very easily to award a person engagement in his devotional service. Devotional service can in fact be attained only through the mercy of a pure devotee. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 19.151, it is said, by the mercy of spiritual master who is a pure devotee, and by the mercy of Krishna, one can achieve the platform of devotional service. There is no other way. The rarity of devotional service is also confirmed in the Tantra Shastra, where Lord Shiva says to Sati, "My dear Sati, if one is a very fine philosopher, analyzing the different processes of knowledge, he can achieve liberation from the material entanglement. By performance of ritualistic sacrifices recommended in the Vedas, one can be elevated to the platform of pious activities and thereby enjoy the material comforts of life to the fullest extent. But all such endeavors can hardly offer anyone devotional service to the Lord. Not even if one tries for it by such processes for many, many thousands of births." So there are so many ways in the Vedas that are described, like how we can elevate ourselves. So how to get perfection now in the Artha, Dharma, Kama, Moksha. And it's mentioned such a way, so then we actually can progress. But, and even if we do so, it is slow. As long as we don't understand who we really are. So as long as we are thinking that we are the enjoyer, and then we are here to enjoy, so then we will not be understanding that we are the servant of the Lord, and therefore we should be serving, because this is our constitutional position. So and then, only when we understand that, then when someone is established, then we can ask, what service can I do? And not, what can Lord do for me? How can he take me out? How can he does not do this for me? How can this, how can that, and everything around me? As soon as we center ourselves around the Lord, everything is around the Lord, he becomes the object. Then it's easy. Because we are here to please the object. And Krishna is the supreme object. So that way then we can very easily find the way how to perform devotional service. Because by the mercy of the Vaishnava or Krishna himself from within the heart, he can inspire us as a Chetaguru. Then we can be instructed what can we do. And it is our fortune not to be able to be part of our society. Because it's coming from the from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. It's Srila Prabhupada's mission. And it is very simple. Just by chanting the holy name, then one can easily achieve Krishna in one lifetime. And that is very rare. So, therefore, we have to be very aware, very conscious of what we want to do. Bliss in devotional service as compared to Brahmananda. In the Hare Bhakti Shuddha, Prahlad Maharaj, while satisfying Lord Nrsimhadev by his prayers, says, "My dear Lord of the universe, I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda to be no more than the water in the impression left by a cow's hoof in the earth compared to this ocean of bliss." So, the comparison here is quite clear. I mean, it's something which we can sort of imagine. No. So, it's like the frog in the well asking, was one frog in the well, and then another frog comes, you know, from, like for a visit from Videsh, and then saying, I saw ocean. And then the frog in the well, okay, is the ocean as big as my well? Oh, it's much bigger. Okay. Is it twice as big as my well? No, it's much, much bigger. But, so, three times bigger? So it's, and could not believe. Because our comprehension, I mean, the frog's comprehension, now just could imagine, this is where I was born, this is where I live, this is the whole world. We don't know what's beyond. So for us it's very difficult to comprehend what that can maybe. But, and it is very difficult for us to comprehend what is the greatness of material world. And what to speak of if we are supposed to understand what is the greatness of spiritual world. We just understand unlimited. So then that means, okay, so we cannot really even think about it. So here the comparison is, okay, it's a cow's hoof print compared to an ocean. So it's something just we can little comprehend. The comparison, but in fact, devotional service and the bliss in the from merging into Brahman, it's not really not very possible to compare it. Yes.
You're basically saying is that analogies are always imperfect, but they just give you something to look at.
See, analogies, not always imperfect, I wouldn't say that. Analogies, they are made such a way, so then they bring the point which you want to illustrate, and many times they have in consideration our own limitations. So, as we cannot really comprehend, not something unlimitedly small. Like, how do we imagine, say, jiva? So it's so small, it's not possible even to observe it. So for us, it is very difficult. As something which is so huge. So we are limited by our senses. So therefore, comparisons in form of analogies are made. So then we can sort of comprehend the difference, how great the difference is. Like, I was just with boys, now we were talking about some of the scientists, they calculated pi. Now, and they came to, I think, like 1 billion digits. So they had
pi.
No, like, so then 3.14, and then you go beyond the decimal point, one billion digits. So then we were just calculating. So if you write, so 1 billion digits, okay, that's all right. I mean, there are so many billionaires, so you don't see it like this. But then we just calculate. So if you take 1 billion digits, and then in 1 centimeter, you write 2 digits. So it would take you 5,000 kilometers to write that number. So if you compare it, if you show it in something which is comprehensible by our mind, then you imagine, I mean, they are stupid. Why they need to do that? It's unusable. I mean, nobody ever would use the pi, the 1 billionth digit of the pi. It's just the pride that, I was first to find out what the 1 billion digit was. What for? So we do so much of endeavor to prove ourselves, to get satisfaction, get something out of the material energy. But we don't get anywhere. That's because the endeavor, it's not properly pointed, not properly directed. So we have to learn, and the analogies, they help us in to understand. So that's the point. Yes.
Used nice analogy to show how analogy works. Is the analogy with the tree, the branch of the tree and the moon. By showing the branch of the tree, of the moon, you show somebody the moon behind the tree.
Yeah.
The moon just look at the tree, oh, you see the tree, and the moon is there.
Yeah. And actually, there was also one incident. How it is important for you to first understand what it is before you can actually understand it. Like there was one man, and he was blind from birth, so he never saw. And but as the medical science advanced, so then there was somebody, they somehow fixed his eyes. They could do that. So then, when they fixed the eyes, then the operation was successful. Then he was sitting in the room with the therapist, whatever, and then for the first time, then they took off the bandage, and then he didn't see anything. So there was a little disappointment. So, but what was it that? The therapist started saying, "Okay, so what do you see?" Well, I don't see anything. So what's in front of you? So then he starts with the hands touching, oh, there's a table, and then there is the cup. And then as soon as he touches, he understands the cup. He saw the cup, and then he saw the table. So then by touching him, so he gets more of the broad vision, and he starts seeing. But before that, he didn't have an understanding of what actually the seeing means. So he didn't know what picture is, and so the brain could not comprehend. Even though, no, like physically everything was okay, but no, the brain could not comprehend the information. So the analogy just brings us closer to something, and the way our conditioned nature can understand. So moon, if you don't know what's moon, no, so then you don't know where to look. Like if you know whom we are looking for, so in the temple room there may be no 1,000 devotees, but if you specifically are looking for one devotee, you just scan everybody and you see the face you are looking for. It's because the brain not comprehends and not selects it. So you have to be able to give the information in such a way so then the brain can comprehend it. If that's so, no, then you can contemplate on how you can apply it. If you don't understand what was said, then there is no question of thinking how you can use it and then realizing it. So that, yeah, analogies are no great tool for how to make us understand what actually is being spoken. Yeah?
Is that why Krishna doesn't reveal himself to us? We want to understand this.
Is that what's that?
Compared to that person that never saw before, and then they fixed his eyes.
Well, his brain was not comprehending, but once he touched, then not the comprehension was there. Krishna can reveal to us anytime he wants, and he can disappear anytime he wants. So it's not if our brain can comprehend or not. Now even demigods can do that. They can be right here, and if they want to, they can now appear, and they can disappear by their will, and we are unable to, with our senses, to see them. So that's there, you know, however they want to do, whatever they want to do. But we cannot claim by our senses that we can go on and see the Lord whenever we want. We cannot even actually see with our senses even the five gross elements. We can see some but not all. Ether, you don't see. Air, you have some idea. So what to speak was subtle. We are so proud of our senses, but switch off the light and then you see nothing. So that's something else. Krishna is different. He is not touched by the material energy. How to perform devotional service? To perform devotional service means to follow in the footsteps of Radharani and devotees in Vrindavan, to put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. In other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world. It is directly under the control of Radharani. So to actually not do devotional service, then we cannot ever claim that we are capable of doing non-devotional service and directly serve to Krishna. We are and we will never be able to do that. So then, why should we endeavor for devotional service? For this very reason, Srimati Radharani, she is the perfect devotee. She knows at for every mood of Krishna, she has way, she has situation, how to please him. So she knows. And everybody else is her devotee. So by serving the devotees of the devotees of the devotees of Srimati Radharani, that way we can achieve perfection, because we can give a little bit. Maybe you can just, not like Shamana Pandit, just you can sweep the Seva Kunj, or you can do even just pluck some flowers. That's great. And you may have, no, you may have time, you have the whole eternity for it. So you can do it, no, perfectly. That's what you can do. That's your devotional service. Because devotional service, as Prabhupada said, it's an activity, but not activity of this material world. So devotional service is an activity. It's not the result. The result is the product of the devotional service. But with the result, we don't stop there. As soon as we perform one activity, it gives the result. The results are not ours because it's devotional service. We already gave them out, gave them away. And immediately we continue another activity, whatever we can, and in whichever way we can serve to the Lord. So we should never think that, okay, now I accomplished my devotional service. Like Srila Prabhupada once, well, he was chanting in his room, and then now he take the feedback and just puts it on the table. Okay, now I finished. So now I can do whatever I want. What the hell you want? No, I want to do.
I can do whatever damn nonsense.
There's something like that. Yeah. So just to show the devotees what they are thinking. Okay, I finished 16 rounds and that's end of devotional service for today. I don't have to chant anymore. I don't have to do anything else. Because I finished minimum and with that I'm so happy. No, so that's not the mood. Okay, great, you finished. You have more time. Chant more. Read. Go for Harinam. Do something. Engage yourself. Don't just, okay, now I can go to sleep. That's not the meaning of engaging oneself in devotional service. So, we should understand the principle of devotional service and the goal. We have to have clear what are we going for. To be able to maintain the Abhideya, the process, then we have to know what is our goal, what are we trying to achieve. How is Krishna bound by devotee's love? A pure devotee never thinks himself great. He always thinks that other devotees are greater than himself. The king was thinking, Prabhupada Maharaj is actually a devotee of the Lord, while I am nothing. And while thinking this, he was addressed by Narada as follows. My dear king, my dear King Yudhishthir, you are the only fortunate people in this world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared on this planet and is presenting himself to you as an ordinary human being. He is always with you in all circumstances. He is living with you and covering himself from the eyes of others. Others cannot understand that he is the Supreme Lord, but he is still living with you as your cousin, as your friend, and even as your messenger. Therefore, you must know that nobody in this world is more fortunate than you. Yeah?
I have a question about this last point of the mm-hmm. devotional service under Srimati Radharani. When we're performing devotional service, should we bear it constantly in mind that there is that we are serving our Guru and that is being appreciated by Srimati Radharani and that is why we'll get the mercy of Krishna?
You see, if you serve just following the instructions of your Guru, you serve your Guru, you achieve perfection. Because you are assisting him who knows how to assist others, and they know how to assist Srimati Radharani. So you don't have to bother yourself too much thinking that I'm trying to please Srimati Radharani, because you will also not be able to directly please her. We are not qualified to approach her also. But by the mercy of the Vaishnava, by the mercy of our Guru, we somehow can get engaged in the service, in the devotional service, and the results, what we actually may consider somewhat be qualified for. So those results will be given through the parampara, and they will be offered Vaishnava Radharani to Krishna himself. So Krishna will in fact see the best of us, and that's what will be pleasing to him.
Is it improper if during our devotional service we're not considering that we're doing this service for our Guru and that we think that we're doing it for Krishna directly?
Well, you see, if depends on what we are actually thinking, what is our qualification. If we feel, if we know that we are so qualified, see, like Rupa Goswami, he is Rupa Mandari said he is qualified to directly approach the gopis and be in the association. So then now we as a Rupanugas, then now we are also in association of Rupa Goswami, but not directly, through our acharyas. And how do we get even to the association of our acharyas? It's the Guru. There must be a connection, otherwise how it will be possible that whom are we following? The Shiksha must be there. We must know how to follow. So, reading from Prabhupada's books, we can understand how to approach Shastra, how to approach devotional service. See, it's Prabhupada, he's so expert in writing, giving the message such a way, so then he writes it in very simple language. It looks very simple, ordinary language. But what he writes in his books is so extraordinary that and so special that you find in the books what you are looking for. And to do that in English, Prabhupada is genius. Whatever you look for, you find. Are you looking for just the basics, the beginning of devotional service? You find everything in Prabhupada's books. How to perform, what to do, why the bhakti, what for, how. Are you looking for higher stages? Are you looking for spontaneous devotional service? You find everything in Prabhupada's books. Same language, just when you read it, your understanding is different. And when you look for Prema Bhakti, you find it in Prabhupada's books. Same book, same writing, but because he was so expert that he put it such a way, so then you find what you look for. So that's Prabhupada's expertise. So not ordinary person can do that. So that's something which we should very deeply contemplate on. So when Prabhupada gives us some instructions, he knows what is the best for us. By following those instructions, then we can achieve the highest perfection. But we have to follow Guru. We cannot be able to see how to perceive the Shastra, how to perceive the instruction of Sadhu if we don't have Guru. Yes?
Does following Guru means that we live our life according to the instructions Srila Prabhupada has given in his books? Does it mean that we have to, that our spiritual master who's giving us initiation must give us a specific instruction to serve and follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions in a particular way?
Look. See, few things. Okay, now you have the spiritual master giving you instruction. He is called a Diksha Guru. But Diksha Guru, who is he? He is the most prominent Shiksha Guru. So, he is one of the Shiksha Gurus. Shiksha is the most important element. Right? The Diksha, as the ceremony, it's there for actually to, solidify, to make it sure that it happens, so then it's a samskara, so makes the impression. And during that, what do you get? You get very, very specific instruction. Every devotee does get very specific instruction, and that is the chanting of the holy name. There is no higher instruction than that. Some devotees, they want, I need some specific instruction from my guru. No, I need that. But they don't understand that they are a god. There is nothing higher. There is nothing better than instruction of chant the holy name. And with that, then follow the godly principles. So, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? What instruction from his sannyas guru got? Now, what did he get? Some specific one, right? Yes, he got very specific one. Just chant the holy name. Because he knows this is the best. How he puts it there, yeah, because he thought that I'm so foolish I cannot study Veda, so then he gave me just chant the holy name. But he understand it was a blessing. Because in the holy name, all the conclusions of the Vedas are. See, that's something which we cannot comprehend. We cannot comprehend how in few word mantra, all the conclusions can be. The brain cannot understand it. Vedas, yeah, but there are so many thousands of pages of mantras. No, they are different. They are something else. And this one mantra, which I can remember in few minutes of the chant, how can that be compared to the Vedas? Oh, because he say, and he is no big and strong guy, right? So we may have the knowledge, but we don't have certain realization of it. So because of that, then we may be committing offenses, we may just don't know what is the reality. But with little faith, following the instructions, and just what we are supposed to do, just chant, attend the programs, be with the devotees, read Bhagavatam, worship deities, worship Tulsi Devi, reside in the holy town, following these, then naturally the understanding will arise in our heart. But it won't be able to make it artificially happen. So therefore we have to be very sincere in our service and have faith in our guru and in our acharyas that they can take us back to Godhead. Yes.
I have a question on this last point. Krishna's bound by the Lord's love. So it's Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj speaking, and my question is about their interaction. So Narada Muni is basically praising Maharaj Yudhishthira. My question is about applying that in relationship between devotees. At least from my observation, it seems like we don't glorify devotees, you know, to their face. I say something about you that's glorious. We don't see that so much between devotees. Is it something that is okay, or could we find it here? So,
well, I mean, sometimes you find, oh, bro, you are such a great guy. No, I'm not. No. No. So, you find. So nice, yeah, he's the real one. He understood who I am. No. So there is the aspect is that devotees, see, even if they get praised, no, so they don't really take it personally. So, like Haridas Thakur, he was abused so much. But then later on he was praised so much, but he always remained as a humble devotee of the Lord. There was no change in his approach. But until and unless we are on that platform, then the Maya can always strike us that we may fall down. So if we get a chastisement for a devotee, that's blessing. And praising, well, no, just be very careful with desiring praising. You may get that, but then the result may not be what you want. So, to arrange somebody comes and praises you, it's not difficult. No, but one should be able to perform devotional service even without that. Because, see, perform devotional service, it should be the standard activity of human beings. So if somebody is performing devotional service, now we see it kind of like it's so rare. But in fact, it should be standard. Who does not perform devotional service, this is below standard. So that needs some boka, some corrections. And if somebody is performing devotional service excellently, that may be mentioned, that may be pointed out. But when something is happening just like a standard, that's expected. So if we do as much as expected, we should not expect that there will be some praises for, oh, you are so good, you are doing anybody else is doing. that's not. But if we put so much effort in doing what we are supposed to and extra, so then for that extra, then that can be taken as an example for others, that look, he is so sincere, he is doing such a great service. But we should be careful that we are ready for it. Oh yeah, I'm doing so great, now I don't have to do anything. And then we may not fall down. So we have to be a bit careful. Yeah? Yes?
Often I hear devotees, they speak about your service and your sadhana. So, can you please explain what is the meaning of service and sadhana? That's a separate thing.
See, well, there can be many definitions of what is service, what is sadhana. But basically, sadhana is something which you perform that will be to support your service. Your service, which you are performing, that's the avideya. So that's the process by which you are coming closer to the Lord. Your sadhana is what makes it actually happen, makes it possible for you to perform service. So your sadhana is you get up in the morning and you take bath. Then you chant. Because when you don't take bath, you are not considered clean, and Krishna doesn't like touching Tulsi Devi with dirty hands when you are muchi. So then, therefore, you took bath. Taking bath, that's your sadhana. But that sadhana is not devotional service, really. Because taking bath, many people do take bath and then they are not Krishna conscious. So that doesn't make you Krishna conscious on itself. But it helps you to perform the right Krishna conscious activities and be successful in those.
So then after you take bath, then you're chanting as your service?
Yes. But if you don't take bath, then it's difficult to perform some kind of services. You cannot not take bath and go on the altar and worship the deities. That will not be appreciated. Yeah. Okay. So that's the ending of the chapter 1. Then the essay questions are there. Whoever still didn't give the essays, I think there are a few. And then you already discussed with everybody regarding the being registered and okay, there are papers there.
Anybody who's paid 100 rupees can get the next installment of the study guide. If you intend to pay, then I'll give you the copy now and
Work it out then with Shanti. Okay. How that works?
Registered students get the study guide and they get credit for the essays. You can write the essays without being registered. You don't get the credit for it.
Essay questions for this week.
They are coming with the.
Chapter 2. Do
they say
questions in here or chapter 1?
Actually, we already gave for the chapter 1.
Uh-huh. That's for introduction.
Nobody got the first chapter papers?
No, you didn't
print
them up.
Oh, so I carried the chapter 2. Okay, so then nobody got that yet, it's an introduction. Okay, so I'll print also the chapter 1. So I'll just give it to you and you can just give it by the end of the Isha Upanishad. Okay. So then, yeah, the questions are there. So then just work it out. I think there are altogether 15, no, I think 14 devotees registered. So then we expect, no, they should be writing the essays. And then, how we work it out, no, because what then, just...
The essays will be handed in, they'll be graded, you receive them back again, and then we want to get them back again. You can either rewrite them, which you try and up, lift up your grade, or just be satisfied with what you've got, and then we should receive the essays back, and we'll keep them on record.
Okay, so then, you can hand it over to me, then I can do the grading, then give you back, and then maybe just after that give it to Shanti. And then he will keep it on file. Yeah. So you keep them. And then those who want to rewrite them later on, so then after the course is over, then you get the chance to rewrite them to get to improve on your credit in case there was some, no.
If we point out a glaring mistake, it's better that you rewrite it. If we're just giving encouragement to improve the quality of it, then just put that into the next mistake.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.